Africa in Progress, Mirror on the Continent. A program produced by Radio Netherlands in partnership with your local station.
All the fishes dead, seafood dead, the whole land polluted. Nothing can grow on that land anymore. The whole place has been overtaken by crude oil.
Welcome to the program. I'm Joke Fayemi. When oil is spilled and contaminates people's lands and destroys their livelihoods, who's responsible? To seek redress, Veronica and her community decided to go the legal way. They sued the oil company they say is to blame for massive oil spills. What's new is that they're suing this multinational corporation in its home country, the Netherlands. This follows a new groundbreaking trend. More and more Western multinationals face legal action at home for harm related to their operations abroad. In the language of lawyers, it's called foreign direct liability. To try to understand this better, we caught up with a young legal researcher from the Netherlands who studied this trend. Her name is Lisbeth Enneking. One of the most prominent among those court cases, she says, is a case against Royal Dutch Shell in the Netherlands.
This is the first of this type of claims that has been brought in the Netherlands. It is groundbreaking in that sense. It is also groundbreaking in the sense that questions are being put before a Dutch court, before the Dutch civil court in The Hague, that courts in the Netherlands have never before had to deal with.
One of the first international court cases was brought in the United States following a disaster in a factory in India in the 1980s, in which thousands of people died. More and more civil suits followed, many involving operations in Africa.
I think it's a significant development internationally where you can see that people who, for some reason, are not able to claim compensation or to find other types of redress or to address harm being caused to them in their own country, now turn to courts in other countries, mostly Western societies, where the parent companies of these multinational corporations are situated, to find redress and to address the harm that is being caused to them in their own country.
And how is this related to what is now called corporate social responsibility? And first, perhaps you can define this.
Corporate social responsibility, I think you can define as the need for companies to not just think about making profits, but also to take into account the consequences of their activities for people and planet, and not just in their own countries, but also around the world, so also in an international context. So what we're talking about here is really international corporate social responsibility, so not just behaving socially responsible at home, but also behaving socially responsible in your activities abroad.
So you say that people expect more and more from the multinational corporations?
Yes, definitely. I think mostly in Western societies, people are looking with more and more scrutiny, also just at local companies, but also at multinational corporations. And I suppose this was first something they were looking at, how are companies performing in our own country. But now, as time progresses, people are also more and more looking at how are internationally operating business enterprises performing in other countries, and especially also in countries, in developing countries, in countries maybe where standards are very different than in the Western society home countries of these multinational corporations.
And are codes of conduct becoming more and more important with that respect?
Yes, I think because of the what you can maybe call peer pressure and also a little bit of political pressure in Western societies, a lot of companies and also multinational corporations are starting to use more and more corporate codes of conduct in which they sort of declare that they will behave in a socially responsible manner. Yeah, so it's really a declaration of how they think they ought to behave, not just at home, but also abroad.
And do you think in general they abide by these codes, or it's just some kind of a varnish to give the impression that they're doing their best?
I think for many companies, it's not just window dressing. I think for many companies, really mean to do good or mean to do better, maybe if necessary. The only thing is, what you can ask is what happens if they break their own code? Do they punish themselves? How do they react? How much do they abide by their own codes? I think in many cases the intentions are good. I think maybe also in many cases companies do take action if they see that maybe their subsidiaries behave in a way that is in contravention with their own codes. But I suppose not all companies will take a hard stance against their own subsidiaries, maybe also because they make profits because of the way their subsidiaries behave in other countries.
So that might explain why these companies are now being sued increasingly in their home countries, because a code of conduct is not enough.
A code of conduct is really a self-regulatory instrument. This is something that you say to yourself. This is something the company says, this is what we think we should do. I think it's a statement of how they think they ought to behave, but it doesn't necessarily say that, you know, they will not sue themselves if they don't abide by their own codes of conduct. It's a self-regulatory instrument. And so what you do see happening is that public scrutiny is getting also more harsh on companies that do say a lot of nice things in their codes of conduct but do not abide by them. But that still is public scrutiny is still something different from actually going to a court and suing these companies because they don't abide by what they say. That is not happening that often yet, although people are thinking along those directions, especially NGOs that are getting more and more active in this field. They are increasingly exploring the boundaries of what is possible, also legally, if companies don't practice what they preach.
Now let's look at the most prominent cases today going on against companies active in Africa.
One of the most prominent cases at this point is a case in the United States that is a result of human rights violations that were perpetrated in Nigeria in the 1990s by the Nigerian regime in that time against a number of local environmental activists, the Ogoni Nine. What is happening now is that these human rights violations were perpetrated by the Nigerian military regime in the 1990s, but they resulted in civil claims also against Shell. Because people are saying it was not just the Nigerian regime that was involved, but it was also Shell, the company Shell, that was involved, because they aided and abetted, they encouraged the human rights violations, or at least they didn't stop the human rights violations perpetrated by the Nigerian regime, and maybe they also profited from it, because the people that were the victim of these violations were local environmental activists who were protesting the environmental degradation caused by oil exploration activities in the Ogoni Land region of the Niger Delta.
Now, why is it possible to sue Shell, which is a Dutch, Anglo-Dutch company, in the United States for things that happened in Africa?
Yeah, that is a very complicated, it's actually a very complicated question. It's difficult to answer as well, and it's also one of the main points of contention in this case at this moment. And this case is currently pending before the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court. And this is one of the questions that the Supreme Court will have to address. Should it be possible to sue a multinational corporation that has some links to the American legal order, but only some links, not many links to the U.S. legal order, for something that happened outside the U.S. and also, you know, involves claims brought by people that are not U.S. citizens.
So you said that this is the most important, the most prominent case. What are the other important cases involving Africa?
There is another case pending in the Netherlands against Shell. It's related to the case that is pending now before the U.S. Supreme Court, but it's a little bit different. It also addresses, but in a different way, it also addresses environmental pollution caused by Shell's activities in the Niger Delta. And this case in the Netherlands is being brought. It's actually three cases that are being brought by local Nigerian farmers for 3 cases of oil spills from Shell-operated pipelines. And these farmers say the damage that was caused, the oil polluted our fish ponds, and the oil polluted our crops, and now we can't fish anymore, we can't harvest anymore. Shell never properly cleaned up the oil, and we would like to see some compensation for the damage that was caused to us. And for some reason, they don't feel that they can really address these issues in Nigeria, so they have decided to take their claims to the Netherlands, where they have brought their claims against the Dutch or Anglo-Dutch parent company of the Shell Corporation, and also against its Nigerian subsidiary.
Let's listen to Chief Eric Bariza Doe, who is part of a group of farmers suing Royal Dutch Shell in its home country, the Netherlands, along with a non-government organization, Friends of the Earth.
My name is Chief Eric Bariza Doe.
Why are you here in the Netherlands?
I am here to attend a court case coming up on Thursday in The Hague between Shell and my father. I'm here to represent him and represent my community. The people that have lost their fishing rights, their farming rights, like my father. My father lost his fishing rights. Our fish ponds were contaminated. Our source of drinking water contaminated. Our farms contaminated, our crops, economic trees, and boats, which we use in digging solid mineral like sharp sand, were all burnt as a result of this crude oil pollution.
What caused that?
Crude oil from that emanated from a Trans-Niger pipeline from Bomu oil field, just close to our house, and the Bodo West oil field on the western part of my community. These two places are disaster zone. And when there is spill in Bodo West, the tide carries it into the creek where our farm is situated. And when it happened in the eastern part where Bomu oil field is located, it also carried the rubbish, the crude oil remnants back to that place. So it is stagnant, and if you go there, seeing is believing. Cake spills are on the ground.
So you say that Shell is responsible for that environmental damage?
Yes, Shell, Royal Dutch Shell Nederland, are owners of Shell Nigeria. Every decision, policies, they are taken from here. So they must accept responsibility, whether they like it or not. Already they are planning to embark on cleaning. If they were not part of it, how would they embark on cleaning?
Eric Doe's case in the Netherlands is one of 3 groundbreaking court cases involving Royal Dutch Shell outside of Nigeria. Legal researcher Lisbeth Enneking says suing a multinational company in its home country seems to offer more hope for justice and redress.
These claims are not happening for nothing. I think in many cases, if the damage could have been redressed locally, then I'm pretty sure people would have taken that route, because it's so much more easy than to actually go to the home countries of these multinationals. The cases that we're talking about, they're increasing in number, but they don't all, well, only very few of them have led to favorable results. A number have. There have been a number of settlements in which money was, so compensation was received by the people bringing these suits. But there are many difficulties involved. Also of a financial nature and of an organizational nature, of a legal nature, obviously. So it's actually very difficult to bring these claims, which also gives you an idea of how dearly these people are in need of finding some place where they can address and receive redress for the damage that has been caused to them.
Would you say that one of the main obstacles is the absence of rule of law in some countries?
I think this is one of the obstacles that people are faced with. What you sometimes see is that people are afraid to bring claims in their own countries because maybe the companies and multinationals that are being sued were acting locally together with the local government or together with the national government. So So maybe they feel that bringing the case locally would maybe endanger them, or they couldn't expect to receive an impartial trial. In other cases, it may also be that maybe the local company has ceased to exist, or maybe the local company just simply does not have the funds to deal with the type of damages that are being claimed. In other cases, people may feel that the legal system is not sufficiently developed in their own country to deal with these types of what are really usually really complicated claims. So there may be a variety of reasons why people feel that they may have much more chance of finding redress in a court in the home country of the multinational corporation involved than in the host countries where the damage was actually caused.
Eric Doe's experience with Nigerian courts was discouraging, he says.
In 1998, there was a very serious spill in my community, Goi.
In Gokana, name of your village?
Yeah, G-O-I, Goi community, in Gokana, Ogoni land in Nigeria. So when we noticed this thing, my father asked them for his fair share. They deprived him. So he filed a suit in the Federal High Court.
In Nigeria,
Port Harcourt. After 7 years, Shell was frustrating him. And that is not the first time Shell frustrated him. So,
what do you mean by frustrated him?
Frustration.
But
you know, when you are frustrated, you are deprived in one way or the other to get justice. Mm-hmm. That you cannot get justice, that is what I mean by frustration in the court. So, my father went further to insist that he will see to the end. So, we battled with Shell until I called him and told him that, look, unless we bring in foreigners, we cannot get justice. So, he said, okay, make your contact. And after some time, we were connected to Friends of the Earth. Jointly, we instituted the case. They let us say they are going to bring in some other communities who have similar problems with us. Now, the one in Nigeria was still running. By the time they wanted to give judgment, because Shell now could not give any reasonable defense, they would say, please, we adjourn this matter for about 6 months or 5 months. Let us go and bring more facts. After 5 months, they cannot bring any facts. When we come to court, they say, we are not able to get hold of some of the facts that you adjourned this for another 4 months. You know, they are paying the judiciary. The judiciary in my country is corrupt, highly corrupt. So you hardly get justice.
Africa in Progress, a program that contributes to the exchange of ideas on the African continent. To find out more, please visit our website, rnw.nl/Africa.
In this edition, we ask why more and more civil court cases have been filed against multinationals in their home countries for human rights violations and environmental damages related to their operations in Africa. Some multinationals argue that their local daughter company should be held liable. Is that a valid argument? This is how Lisbeth Enneking, a young legal expert from the Netherlands and our guest in the program, sees it.
For instance, if you look at the Shell claims that are being brought in the Netherlands, I think one of the things that the plaintiffs are saying in this case is to the parent company of the Shell multinational corporation is, how can you say that you're not involved? How can you say you have an integrated multinational group? You have say over your subsidiaries. You benefit from the activities that are being carried out locally. You are the one that is ultimately receives the profits. How can you say that this is none of your business? That this is just the subsidiary, and that we should just talk to the subsidiary and try to find redress address from the subsidiary. Obviously, these people feel that in these integrated multinational groups, the parent companies are very much involved in what is happening locally. And in a sense, they are right.
You've been studying this. You've just written a thesis on this topic. What are the most significant developments in the last few years?
What I do think is encouraging about this all is that these cases are gaining more public interest, but also more political interest in these Western society home countries of these multinational corporations. So it's not just, they're not just causing the general public to be more aware of what are the consequences. You know, for instance, Shell. We buy our gas here for our cars. You know, we fill up our cars with Shell gas, and I think it is really important when you do so that you are aware of all the costs involved of that 1 liter of gas that you put into your car. And I think so that I do think there is a growing awareness among the public, also in Western society, home countries of these multinationals, of what are the true costs of the activities and of the products that are being put on the market by these multinationals. So that is one side of it. And then the other side of it is that I do think these cases are also generating more political awareness and some sort of a political momentum where you can see politicians and policymakers in these Western society home countries saying, okay, so maybe there is a role for us too. Maybe we should not just leave it to these multinationals themselves and with their corporate codes of conduct and all their best intentions. I mean, let's make that clear. Most of these companies, I suppose, do have really good intentions. But maybe we should not leave it up just to these companies to decide, especially when they're operating in environments where the rule of law is not that strong, or where standards are really low, where standards, local standards, are maybe even below international standards. Maybe when our multinationals are operating in such environments, we shouldn't just leave it up to them to decide which standards they adhere to. Maybe we should also step in and tell our multinationals that they should operate socially responsible, not just at home, but also abroad.
In recent years, in the Netherlands, there had been special parliamentary hearings like this one about the activities of the oil giant Shell in Africa.
The Netherlands is the capital of international law. We have the International Court of Justice, mm-hmm. We have the ICC, the International Criminal Court. Should there be some kind of international or business ICC, for example, to address these issues?
Definitely. I think that would be a really good development. Realistically, I think it'll be a long time before we see anything close to that. What you see now is that one of the problems, obviously, is that there are no or very few international norms that say how companies should behave. And what you see is at the same time is as a result of globalization, more and more companies are operating on an international scale. But the international rules to match this are really lacking, especially when it comes to international rules saying how their pursuit of profits should be tempered in order to protect human rights, in order to protect the environment, in order to protect labor rights. When you speak of international human rights norms, those are there. There is still a lot of discussion, however, whether these norms actually do apply to companies which are legal entities. They're not individuals, they're legal entities. Do international human rights norms apply to these legal entities? And then the second question is, the norms are there, but there is no international court where you can go to as a victim. If you as a victim feel that your human rights have been violated by the activities of a multinational corporation, there is not an international court that you can turn to. So this is what you see happening. As a result, people turn to local courts in the home countries of these multinational corporations to address the human rights violations that they have been a victim of, or to address the environmental degradation that is causing them problems, that is causing them harm. So this is what you see happening. Ideally, there should be an international court to deal with these types of issues, but there just is not at the moment. So this is why local courts get involved.
So until that happens, we will continue to have to deal with double standards the fact that companies are submitted to very stringent, very strict laws at home and not always abroad where they operate sometimes.
Yeah, so until that happens, we do have to deal with double standards, which is a really difficult issue. But I suppose as long as people or governments in different countries think differently about the importance of protecting the environment and the importance of protecting people against corporate activities, there will always be double standards. And as long as governments around the world think very differently about how much protection there should be for their local environment and for their local people, then I also don't think there will be an international treaty coming anytime soon. Because obviously for an international treaty with maybe international norms on how multinational corporations should behave, you need consensus. You need consensus between the countries involved. And as long as this consensus is a long way from being here, we will not see a treaty coming. So until the day that treaty comes, we will have to deal with double standards. And these double standards cause very difficult issues and very difficult questions that the judges sitting in these cases, you know, home country judges are now struggling with. And this is what you also see happening in the United States. And this is what you see happening in the Netherlands. You see courts that have to deal with questions of what type of care, what level of care can you expect from multinational corporations when the legal standards are so different in two countries. What level of care? How much care should Shell take? Or should we tell them they must now put 24/7 protection or security companies along their pipelines to make sure that there is no sabotage anymore? Is this what we should expect of Shell? I mean, obviously that comes with huge costs. What are the risks of saying that they don't have to do that? What is the likelihood of oil spills? How dire are the consequences of these oil spills? And these are things that these courts are now asked to weigh against each other to balance these different interests. So the interests on the one hand of making a profit of corporate activity, which obviously also helps local people because they are employed and they get access to oil and obviously economic activity is very good for a country. So on the one hand you have that interest, but on the other hand you have the interests of local farmers who see their crops being damaged by oil spills and who see their fishing ponds and their fish being killed by oil spills. And how should you now weigh those interests against each other? And this is really the question that is being put before the courts in these Western societies now.
Lisbeth, yourself, personally, how did you get involved? How did you get interested in this field?
My father used to have a very international job, and he used to travel a lot, also to Africa. So I was always interested in the difference also in legal standards and the differences in ways of life also between the Netherlands, where I live, and other countries, especially in Africa. And at the time when I was looking for a subject for my master's thesis, this was something that was at the front of my mind. And I also had a boyfriend at that time who lived in South Africa. So this was something that really interested me. And then I came across this little article in The Economist about a civil suit being brought in the United States against a multinational corporation for harm being caused in, I don't recall, it was probably the Shell case. I suppose it was for harm being caused in Nigeria. And so this immediately got my interest. And I just started wondering, how would this work? Could a case like that be brought in the Netherlands as well? And so then I thought, well, this is really a topic that I would like to explore more. 2 years into my PhD thesis, this was when an actual case was brought against Shell in the Netherlands. So, and it's quite interesting now to look back at my hypothetical chapter that I wrote in 2006 and see that a lot of the issues that I discussed there as hypothetical questions are now actually being answered.
You're monitoring this case. What do you hope will come out of it?
It would be very interesting to see if the court were to award damages to the Nigerian plaintiffs in the Dutch Shell cases. But even if they wouldn't do so, if they would say we don't see that you have provided us with enough evidence to sustain your claims, that doesn't necessarily mean that similar cases will not be brought again before Dutch courts in the future. It is a little bit like the genie is out of the bottle now, and it cannot be put back in. So people have found that there are ways to sue multinationals for harm being caused or harm they have caused abroad. I think this is something that will stay with us for the next decades until we come to a more international agreement on how we expect multinational corporations to operate, not only at home but also abroad.
You've been listening to Africa in Progress, a program produced by Radio Netherlands Worldwide in partnership with your local station. In this edition, we spoke to Chief Eric Bariza Dole from Nigeria and Lisbeth Enneking, a legal researcher at the University of Utrecht in the Netherlands. To find out more about this and previous editions of Africa in Progress, please check our website at www.rnw.nl/Africa or find us on Facebook. I'm Joke Fayemi. Thanks for listening.